Hello, I'm Lina Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we will look at road traffic accident. But first, the combination of climate change and a growing world population may threaten global food security. Experts say crop yields could decrease by 30%, while the world's population could surge to over 10 billion. As the UN marks World Population Day, Mohamed Yusuf reports that changes in agriculture, especially in Africa, may be the only way forward.
The global population is expected to grow over the next 60 years from 8.2 billion today to 10.3 billion in the 2080s. Much of that growth will occur in Africa, where many countries will have high fertility rates. The United Nations Population Fund, UNFPA, says climate change is expected to exacerbate global inequalities and trigger national and international migration. UN agencies say 1 billion of the 1.3 billion people living in Africa struggle to afford healthy diets, and hunger worsened between 2019 and 2022. Africa's farmland has been shrinking because of persistent drought, while the growing population leave less space to farm. Chris Ojiwo is a principal scientist at the International Maize and Wheat Improvement Center. He says African farmers need to produce a lot of food in small spaces to feed the growing population.
We cannot even think of a human way or ethical way to stop population growth, so let it grow. But let us be able to produce more within a small area. For example, where we are able to produce only one ton of maize, let's say per hectare, why don't we work, and that's what we are doing, to improve this productivity, to go beyond one ton to two, to three, to four, to five, to 10 tons per hectare, considering developing varieties, but also production systems that enable us to be able to produce in intensified system on one hand, but also to be able to produce even when there is drought.
Speaking at a conference this week in Mexico, Anne Vaughan, Deputy Assistant Administrator of the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, said that scientific research and technology can help farmers cope with climate change and assist them in cultivating diverse crops.
To help make sure we're accelerating smart innovations so that farmers are getting access, so even in the face of pretty horrific drought, they're still able to produce food for themselves and their families. And what that looks like is making sure we have the right science, the right seeds, the right private sector partners who are pulling and creating a demand for these types of seeds, diversifying so you're not just growing maize, but you're growing cowpea and other things that are more resilient to climate change, the right type of practices so that you're mixing and intercropping, having less till.
The U.S. government launched Feed the Future in 2010, an initiative aimed at addressing the causes of hunger and poverty in developing countries worldwide. The program improved African agriculture system by promoting sustainable practices that consider climate challenges, that help increase economic opportunities, employment and trade. In some African countries, the dominance of maize crops as the primary source of food has worried experts. The crop relies on rain, and climate change is causing unpredictable rainfall patterns. Ojiwo says African farmers must change when and what they grow to produce enough food.
Ensuring that production and productivity continues, whether it is in season or off season, not necessarily relying 100% on rain-fed agriculture. And the diversification that I mentioned here also is not over-relying on one single crop for population survival. I know many countries are relying on either maize or something of that sort in terms of cereals, and ignoring some of the other crops that would fit into these systems.
Due to increasing drought in several African countries, farmers are urged to cultivate crops such as cassava, sorghum, pigeon peas, and pearl millet, which are resilient to unpredictable and harsh weather conditions. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
A new World Health Organization report shows that road traffic death rates in the past decade have increased significantly in the African region, with almost 250,000 lives lost on the continent's roads in 2021 alone. Conversely, global rates fell by 5% during the same period. Between 2010 and 2021, the region recorded a 17% increase in road-related fatalities, according to the WHO status report on road safety 2023 for the African region, the latest update. The region accounts for nearly one-fifth of all road deaths globally, despite being home to only 15% of the world's population and 3% of its vehicles. Joining us via phone from Nairobi, Kenya, for more on the subject is Dr. Binta Sako, Technical Officer for the WHO Regional Office for Africa. Dr. Sako, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
The data is very concerning, I must say. I mean, personally, when I look at the percentage of road traffic accidents in Africa compared to how much vehicles the continent has as opposed to the rest of the world, what do you make of it? What are your thoughts?
Yes, it is very concerning, especially because, you know, we're the only region that has increased its number of deaths compared to all the others that have reduced in the past 10 years. And as you said, we have 15% only of the world's population, only 3% of the world's vehicle, only 1% of the network of paved roads, and yet we suffer 19% of the global burden. So it is concerning, and we don't like the trends that we see in this last report. It should have been a reverse trend, just like in most of the other regions, all the other regions in the world, actually.
So talk to us about some of the causes. We hear a lot that alcohol is, do not drink and drive. We know alcohol is a problem. But when it comes to the region specifically, given the fact that the data is increasing, the numbers are increasing on the continent, what are the reasons why Africa is seeing an increase?
I think it's multifactorial. You know, it's not one thing that is causing the situation. First of all, we are a growing population and, you know, urbanization without the infrastructures that follow is one of the reasons. The increased number of vehicles that are unregulated. We are the first importers of used vehicles, and most of the time they're not roadworthy. And then we also have to talk about the behavioral risk factors, you know, about speeding, about drink driving, where we have maybe less regulations around those issues, allowing this behavior to take place and not enforcing enough the positive behaviors, the positive changes that we want to see. So I think it's really multifactorial, and we have to also admit that the infrastructure that we have to respond to a crash are also inadequate. So unlike in other regions where a person who gets into a car crash can be rushed and get immediate treatment, perhaps in Africa there will be delay leading to more injuries, you know, more serious consequences and also death. So I think it's a combination of elements that are causing the situation that we're living right now in Africa, and it takes really a more holistic approach. It's not about only the road users. It's really all the different factors that will affect safety. So the roads, the vehicles, the people, the laws that are in place, etc. So all this does play a role.
So You said it is a multi-sectoral issue, and the solution would be a holistic approach. If we want to dissect it a little bit and look at the regulations, whose responsibility is it? Is it coming from the WHO and the responsibility of countries to implement it, or is there a point where countries have to take this, their own approach to addressing this issue when it comes to regulation?
I think, I mean, the first responsibility is at national level. We at WHO and with partners as well have developed guidelines. What we do is we produce these reports to give countries a baseline to work with and to see where there are gaps. And we have really a great assessment of the different policies that are in place, the different regulations. And we also provide the recommendations with evidence-based interventions that have worked elsewhere and that can be taken up and implemented by countries. But the first responsibility, I would say, lies at the country level with commitments to implement what we know, what WHO recommends. And WHO is not the only player in this field. We also have the UN commissions, the UN Economic Commissions that have regulations on vehicle safety and road worthiness. There are many other partners. We can include also the NGOs who are advocating for change. So I think it's really an approach that, as you said, holistic approach. It's a systems change. So we have to really think of the different elements that compose the system and dissect it and see where we have the gaps. And this report just does that. It makes a great assessment of not only we don't only report on the number of deaths, because I think we tend to focus on that, and the report gives much more than that. It really gives the landscape of the policies and what we can do better, because it's really a best practice approach. We show what's the best practice and how countries are faring towards that best practice.
One of the issues that transpired is the lack of comprehensive road traffic data in Africa. How does it impact efforts to improve road safety and reduce fatalities and injuries?
I think it's a very, very important issue. It's at the cornerstone. It doesn't directly impact on death or a crash, but it really has a very, very profound impact, because you cannot solve what you don't understand. Mm-hmm. And the data, when the data is underreported, and that's what we see very often, the data is underreported, we don't see the magnitude of the issue. That's one. So we tend to underestimate the issue, and the share of road traffic fatalities on the global burden or the national burden of health in countries. That's one. The second thing, when we don't have quality data, is we don't understand what is going on. We don't understand why people are dying in the road. What caused those crashes? Is it, is it poor infrastructure? Is it poor lighting? Is it alcohol? Is it the use of alcohol? So understanding exactly what is going on, and that is collecting data, that the transport sector collects the data, that the hospital sector collects the data, so we know who really are the victims, so that we tailor our interventions to make sure that we respond to the needs. And that it's not just blinded and we just, implement what we heard work somewhere else, when it is not maybe the reality of the country. So data is extremely important. We have this tendency of, focusing on fatalities, but there are also the injuries. The injuries' long-term consequences have a great impact on the healthcare system. It's a burden for the healthcare system to have to deal with, long-term injuries, with the, the need for rehabilitation, and the consequences are really huge for the people. And knowing, understanding what all the trajectory, if I can say, is really important to put in place policies that make sense for the people.
So, Dr. Sako, looking at solutions, if, let's say, any given country on the continent wants to really make a difference, right, and they say, okay, they saw this report and they really want to do something about it, what would you say are the first steps, 1, 2, 3 steps that countries can take to go toward solutions?
Well, I think the first thing we do is take stock. The report provides that opportunity to look at our situation in terms of numbers of deaths, but also in terms of legislation on all aspects of road safety. We have the baseline. And coming from the baseline, what are the different interventions that are effective? Because we only promote effective evidence-based interventions. So what are these interventions? We know them. How now can it be implemented? And that requires political will. That's usually the area that is deficient, where we know what we have to do, but we can't do it because perhaps there's not enough political will, or there's not enough resources. That's also a big challenge, and it's a challenge for everyone in the world, and maybe a little bit more in Africa, but it's a common challenge that we're facing. And I think it's for governments to really have a plan on how they can go from their situation to better. And we have examples in Africa, actually, where there's been reductions in the past 10 years in fatalities. So it is doable. It is doable.
So when we look at the 2030 goal of achieving the United Nations target of halving global road traffic deaths and injuries by 2030 in Africa, how can this be achieved? You said it is doable. Is it a realistic goal by 2030 for Africa, given what the report is showing?
I think it's absolutely doable, because what the report shows is that between 2010 and 2020, the 17 countries reduced their numbers, and about 5 reduced by more than 30%. So between 30 and 49%. So we didn't reach the 50% reduction for that first 10 years, but we are very close. And it really shows that it does require effort. It does require collaboration and good coordination, and you know, the rational use of a good use of the funds that are available. But it is doable. So I'm very optimistic, really, after this report on the future of us attaining the SDG.
And finally, Dr. Sako, before we let you go, what are the main takeaways for you from this report?
Main takeaway is that, I think I've already said it, we have a lot to do. A lot to do. We are very far from where we should be. There are huge gaps that the report has shown, especially in terms of legislation. There are huge gaps, but it is doable, and we have all the tools. Now we need the actors to get together and to make a plan and implement. So we have the solutions. We need to implement the answers.
Okay, great. Dr. Binta Sako, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
That was Dr. Binta Sako, Technical Officer for the WHO Regional Office for Africa. You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. A new vaccine against malaria, R21, is launched in Ivory Coast 6 months after the development of the first malaria vaccine. The West African country plans to vaccinate 250,000 children between the ages of 0 and 23 months across the country. Malaria kills nearly 500,000 children under the age of 5 every year. A clinical trial in February found that the vaccine prevented about 3/4 of symptomatic malaria cases in young children the first year after they get shots. The new vaccine has also been approved in Ghana, Nigeria, Burkina Faso, and the Central African Republic. With support from the Gavi Global Vaccine Alliance, about 15 African countries are planning to introduce one of the two malaria vaccines this year. The United Nations Humanitarian Agency says it is struggling to raise enough funds to tackle an alarming rate of food insecurity in Nigeria's conflict-ridden northeast. Officials say a rising number of global crises are forcing countries that need help to compete for scarce resources. VOA correspondent Timothy Obiezu reports from Dikwa in Borno State.
The desperate cries of severely malnourished children echo in this hospital in Northeast Nigeria, where they wait in line for life-saving treatment. This facility in Dikwa is about 90 kilometers from the city center. It's already treated more than 300 children this year, and new patients are arriving every day. Aid workers say there isn't enough space to handle them all.
There are more than 45 patients waiting for us to admit them. What we do is that we'll do rounds. If we do ward rounds and we find out that those that are stable, those that have been cured, they are free to go home.
But for every child that goes home, officials say about 10 others need the spot. And eligibility sometimes is based on the severity of conditions. Zainab Musa, who has been displaced by conflict for 10 years, lives in Dikwa. She says one of her twins is finally getting treatment.
My son became sick because I was hungry. I couldn't eat well enough to breastfeed both of them. But here our situation has improved. They feed me 3 times a day.
With an estimated 2 million children suffering from severe malnutrition, UNICEF says Nigeria has the world's second highest number of stunted children. The UN Children's Agency says every hour, 100 Nigerian children under the age of 5 die of malnutrition, and that only 20% of the sick children get treated. The United Nations warns without immediate intervention, there could be catastrophic consequences of food insecurity in places like this. Officials say the food insecurity and malnutrition crisis are the compound effect of the prolonged insurgency, climate change, and government policies that have set food prices beyond reach. Food inflation in Nigeria has surpassed 40% according to the Statistics Office. In May, the UN and Nigerian authorities launched a $306 million appeal to address food security for about 5 million people in states most affected by conflict. But officials say donations are dropping.
If you look at the trends of humanitarian funding that Nigeria has been receiving in the 10 past year, you see a constant decline. You see a real shrinking of this funding because also, as I say, priority comes into conflict. The number of conflicts increases almost day by day, month by month, year by year.
But back in Dikwa, aid groups are helping thousands grow food at home using methods that are climate smart.
Our participants bought bumper harvests from the arable crop that they farm on their farmland. They diversify their means of livelihood and thereby ensuring food security.
On Monday, Nigeria announced plans to suspend taxes on certain food imports, including wheat and maize, to return to lower prices. But until something drastic happens, officials say the future of millions of people, especially children, hangs in the balance. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Dikwa, Borno State, Nigeria.
The World Health Organization is warning that mpox remains a global health threat, voicing particular concern at a swelling outbreak of a new, deadlier strain of the disease in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The WHO says it has received reports of cases from 26 countries in the past month alone. South Africa has recently reported 20 cases of mpox, including 3 deaths, the first cases in the country since 2022, according to French news agency AFP. Of particular concern is the situation in the DRC, where a new strain of the virus has been spreading since last September with 11,000 cases, including 445 deaths reported this year. Now, the Kenyan government is using a new mobile application to educate girls about menstrual health. Through the Oki Kenya app, users can access information on hygiene and other topics. The goal is to dispel myths and misconceptions about menstruation and protect girls against teenage pregnancies. Victoria Amunga reports from Nairobi.
At Kenya's LVCT Health Call Center in Nairobi, workers respond to phone calls and text messages from across the country. They say most of the questions are about reproductive health, especially the menstrual cycle. Menstruation is often shrouded in secrecy and shame in Kenya, according to UNICEF. The agency says teenage girls often look for information about it online, but what they find is not always accurate. To help them, the Kenyan government, UNICEF and LVCT Health created OK Kenya, a mobile app that allows teenage girls to learn about their bodies in private. LVCT Health Counselor Kate Ogutu heads the OK Kenya app desk.
It tells them having your periods, that's a normal thing. It's not something to be ashamed of. They'll be able to know where they can get these products that they need, or also support mentally, because some people don't know when they're having their periods. They will wonder, why am I leaving blood?
Cecilia Loku is one of more than 8,000 people using the application. Loku, a mother of one, says her teenage pregnancy could have been avoided if she had received the information available on the app.
If I had that information, like this app, it can predict my periods, my safe days, when I'm ovulating, I will be pregnant or I will be a mother of one right now.
According to several healthcare organizations worldwide, abstinence, refraining from all forms of sexual activity, is the only 100% effective way to avoid pregnancy. Various forms of contraception, such as using birth control pills or condoms, also greatly reduce the odds of conception. OK Kenya users can not only track their menstrual cycles on the app, but also text or call mentors and learn about reproductive health rights. Kate Kiema is Director of Programs and Impact at She's the First, a US-based girl support organization that works in Kenya and supports the app. She says innovation such as the app is needed in a society that shies away from discussing sexual and reproductive health.
Mentors are particularly shy to talk to girls about whether it's puberty or whether it's about menstrual hygiene. So you can imagine if a girl is coming from a community who think periods is such a taboo, this girl doesn't have anyone to explain to her this is a natural biological process.
An average of 4 in 10 girls in Kenya are pregnant or have had a child, according to the Ministry of Health. In a telephone interview, the ministry's deputy head, Janet Muller, said poverty and lack of education, especially in remote areas, aggravate the cases. The state established a 10-year reproductive health policy in 2022 that outlines actions to reduce teenage pregnancies, such as promoting knowledge about menstrual cycle and the use of contraception. Kenyan authorities believe tools like OK Kenya app will help teenage girls get the information they need. Victoria Amunga, VOA News, Nairobi.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message, leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1. Then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1. Then 202-258-3076.
That is all for this edition of Health Chat. We thank our guest, Dr. Binta Sako, Technical Officer for the WHO Regional Office for Africa. Thank you all for joining us, and thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Linor Mudu in Washington, with producer Mubilia Barrow. Until next time, take care, stay well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
The African diaspora has long played a vital role in supporting families back home. On the next edition of Our Voices, we'll explore opportunities for Africans in the diaspora to find financial success in their native countries, challenges they might face, and explore innovative platforms that are helping to bridge the gap. Join the